Brothers and sisters, the passage that we just heard from St. Mark's Gospel takes no time to show us who Jesus is. You see, St. Mark is very concerned with the identity of Jesus. And so in this very first chapter of his Gospel, he informs his readers that Jesus is one who is powerful in both word and in deed. St. Mark tells us that the crowds were astonished at Jesus' teaching because he taught not as the scribes, but as one who has authority. And this is an important concept for us to understand. You know, generally when people are teaching, they make an appeal to authority. And we see this all the time in our world. You know, a doctor will appeal to experts in a certain field, or academics will footnote their works with all kinds of citations of various experts and other thinkers. Scientists will make a reference to some authoritative experiment that proves or disproves certain concepts. And things are no different in religious circles. Religious leaders often reference holy men and women or experts in their field. You may have noticed that a lot of times when I preach, I reference various saints or popes throughout my preaching. And when I do that, I'm not trying to show you guys how smart I am or anything like that. I'm trying to show you that what I'm teaching isn't just my mere opinion, but it's backed by a greater authority. And this way of teaching isn't something that's new to modernity. It would have been the same in Jesus' day. In Jesus' day, the religious leaders, such as the scribes, would have made appeals to certain authorities when they taught. They would have referenced the various prophets and other great teachers. And if they really wanted to drive home a point, they would have referenced the Torah, which would be the highest authority for any Jew. Now enter this very strange man, Jesus. Jesus enters the synagogue, and he begins to teach. Now, mind you, Jesus was not a religious leader, so his appearance in the synagogue as a teacher is already quite unusual. But see, what's even more shocking is that when he teaches, he does so not by appealing to some external authority. He doesn't even reference the Torah. Instead, he claims authority unto himself. He says that he himself is the authority. And we see this when we hear him say all the time things like, "You have heard it said, but I say." You know, people in Jesus' day would have heard that and said, "Well, who the heck do you think you are to say that you say something that's going to override the laws, the prophets, the Torah?" What we see here is that Jesus is claiming this authority unto himself, and he forces a choice. Either Jesus has this authority that he claims to have, or he's overstepping his boundaries and he's a lunatic. Now, of course, for those of us who believe that Jesus is God, we accept that he does, in fact, have this authority. And so this means we have to pay great attention to him. St. Mark shows us that Jesus has this authority. And he shows us this by demonstrating that Jesus is able to back his teaching, not with some authoritative statement from somebody else, but with powerful works, with powerful deeds. In the synagogue where he was teaching, there was a man with an unclean spirit. And this man cries out, and suddenly a battle ensues. It's a battle between Jesus and the unclean spirit. The unclean spirit is also trying to claim an authority. And he shouts out, saying, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are." See, having knowledge of a person is a way of trying to define and limit that person. When you claim to have knowledge or know who somebody is, you're claiming that I can define you. And that's what this spirit was doing. And furthermore, when you claim to know somebody, you're claiming an authority over that person. You know, we've all seen this in our days of getting in trouble on the playground, right? When an adult would come up to us and say, "I know who you are," or worse, "I know who your parents are." You know, when you heard those words coming from an adult, you knew that you better behave because that person had some kind of an authority over you. By claiming to know who Jesus is, this unclean spirit is confronting Jesus and trying to limit Jesus' authority. Well, Jesus enters into this fray and leaves no doubt that this unclean spirit has absolutely no authority over him whatsoever. Jesus rebukes the unclean spirit and drives it out of the man. And in doing so, we see that the authority of Jesus is manifest in a very tangible way. By driving out the unclean spirit, Jesus demonstrates that his claim to authority has merit. He has power unlike anyone else, including the scribes and the Pharisees. And the people were amazed at the power that Jesus displayed. And they began to ask themselves what this might mean. And nearly 2,000 years later, we're caught in a similar quandary. We still wonder what this means. And while Jesus' fame is certainly spread throughout the world, there are still many who find his authority difficult to accept. And instead of accepting Christ's authority, they rebel against it. I mean, we can just think of the way in which people treat the church, right? I mean, we recall that Jesus passed his authority on to the church. He did that when he said, "You are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." But many people challenge Jesus' authority by questioning the authoritative teachings of the church. You know, some people deny that Jesus even had authority to pass on to the church, and therefore they dismiss church teachings. Others just say, well, these aren't teachings that come from Jesus, they just come from men, you know, sinful men, the bishops and the pope, and therefore we can dismiss them or ignore them. But see, what that mindset dismisses is the fact that Jesus is God. It denies that Jesus, in his infinite wisdom, knew exactly what he was doing when he handed authority on to Peter and on to his church. See, if we believe that Jesus is God, we have to understand then that he knew exactly what he was doing when he gave authority to the church, and he knew how it would play itself out 2,000 years later. And yet, that didn't prevent Jesus from giving that authority to the church, which means that we can have confidence that the church is truthfully and authoritatively speaking when it speaks on matters of faith and morals. And therefore, we do well to listen to the church. You know, those who dismiss the authority of the church often appeal to other authorities and use those for guidance in their lives. You know, some people will appeal to science. Others will appeal to their feelings. And yet others will appeal to people like Oprah or Wendy Williams. But in doing so, what they're ultimately doing is rejecting the authority of Christ. See, rather than following God the Creator, they're following the whims of creatures. And this, of course, is nothing new. This is a mentality or a dynamic that has been in existence since the dawn of time. Adam and Eve had one simple rule: don't eat from this tree. And yet, instead of following it, they listened to a creature, the serpent. And at the time, it seemed not only harmless, but good. In the book of Genesis, we're told that when Eve looked at that fruit, she saw that it was good for eating. But ignoring God's authority and acting on the authority of a creature was wrought with disastrous consequences for all of creation. Well, friends, the same is true for us today. When we listen to authorities other than God, be it science, celebrities, or even our government, we can't expect things to go well for us. For none of them have an authority unto themselves, despite what they may claim at times. It's only God whose words are efficacious. He's the only one whose decrees are truly binding for all times and for all places. And therefore, we do well to listen to him. Now, this may sound burdensome, but here's the good news. This powerful and authoritative God is also a loving God. And this means that his commands are not self-seeking, but rather they're oriented for the good of another. Love, after all, means to will what is good for another. So God's commands seek what is good for us. You know, think again to that unclean spirit. Jesus drove the spirit out of the man, not for his own benefit. Jesus didn't benefit in any way from that, but for the benefit of the possessed man. And therefore, in doing so, Jesus shows not only that he's powerful and that he has an authority, but he also shows that he has a true concern for others. Friends, when we follow God's laws, good things happen to us. And they do so not because God is rewarding us for obedience as if we were, you know, some sort of a pet that just rolled over, but because his commands are intended from the very beginning for our benefit. When we disobey God, the negative consequences that we experience are not so much a punishment for disobedience, but they're the natural result of rejecting what is good and what is healthy and replacing it with things like Twinkies and Oreos, things that taste good at first but don't truly seek what is good for us. Therefore, we need to trust in God's love and to follow the commands that he gives us through Christ and through the church so that we can truly enjoy the good that God wishes to bestow upon each one of us. Brothers and sisters, peace to you and to all who accept the authority of Jesus Christ.